America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Start your engines. It's Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer. And American Adversaries are in your lead car to help you navigate safely home with the best in political professional wrestling. Lair Adams at the wheel with you live for the next hour. And maybe we'll discuss why Americans don't feel so optimistic lately. Especially when you hear stories like Reverend Jesse Jackson declaring the government should just take everyone's 401ks and savings and use it to shore up entitlements for people who can just never get enough. Our host loves to give. He gives headaches to anyone who feels that way, Christopher Hart.
You want to talk about a harebrained idea? That is a harebrained idea from a harebrained. All right,
but think about the other. To me, I sort of see. Do I hear reparations? Maybe a little bit in that.
Without having said so?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you would presume the people he's talking about. But we won't presume anything around here, folks. But we do appreciate you being with us. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer. And indeed, we are coming to you live from the mercury-free broadcasting studios. And don't you dare forget, for the best in mercury-free dentistry, call my friend Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. All right, we got a big show lined up for you today. Abe Katzman's going to join us, and he's got a great new article out. And, you know, the so-called peace talks are falling apart over there. But this was pretty much predictable, and I think we more or less, without out-and-out predicting it, suggested that this process was going nowhere. But we'll talk about that with Abe. And then Nostra Dennis is going to join us later. You can join us at any time as well. 407-774-8255 is the number. I am Christopher Hart. That was Lair Adams. And we'll be here with you live until 6. Now, it looks like there's some nasty weather heading our way. And tomorrow, when you go to work or when you get up in the morning, may be wet outside. So please allow yourself some extra time to get where you're going.
I think Jacksonville's facing a tornado watch.
Yeah, and it's a squall line, so just be prepared for anything. You know, like the old Boy Scouts used to say, be prepared. But not too many people are listening to the Boy Scouts anymore. Perhaps we'll talk about that later on. Oh, boy, what a week, though, in sports. And not for the better. It started off last Thursday night. The Preds lost. They went up to New Orleans, and the Voodoo put a hex on them, and they lost their first game. However, they are still 3-1, and they're going to be home this Thursday night. And I hope you folks will come out and see the Preds along with me and some other folks. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And that's, of course, at the CFE Arena out to UCF way. And then the Gators lost, made the Final Four, and I have to admit they did not look good, but lost to the team that had beaten them last.
Yes.
So perhaps UConn had their number. Let's see what happens tonight. The big game is tonight in terms of the final between Kentucky and UConn. And then last night, lo and behold, Undertaker's 21-0 streak at WrestleMania came to an end. Thank you,
Lesnar won.
Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Didn't think it was going to happen, but the Undertaker lost at WrestleMania last night. By the way, record numbers for WrestleMania. And what kind of thanks did they get in the stock market today? their prices, their stock went down 20%.
But the whole market had. The whole market, I was going to say.
So, folks, listen up. Gary Kaltbaum, who's going to join you right after we go off the air at 6 o'clock with Investor's Edge, he'll help you wade through what may have happened.
Yeah, because I don't know what happened.
Well, the big names rolled over today, so this would indicate that we're in what they call a correction. So Gary will fill you in on that. But even with all those losses, folks, you can be a winner, and I do mean a big winner this week. How so? Because you could win a 600-pound, $1,600 Hanes Everglades high-quality gun safe. That's right, folks.
It's coming up, too.
That's right. The safe will be awarded to the winner Saturday, and you must be present for the drawing. And it will be at Armstrong Lock and Safe in downtown Orlando, right there on North Mills Avenue, just north of Mark Street. And they're going to have their annual tent sale going from 8 to 8, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun. You got prizes to give away, contests, and things like that, food. And just bring the whole family. It'll be a lot of fun, Saturday especially, because about 5 o'clock on Saturday, they're going to select the winner. The winner will be picked. And how you get in the drawing is take these numbers down. You take these numbers, 7, 45, 78, 6 and 60, right? Remember that? 660, 745, 78, 660, and go to am660theanswer.com and just follow the prompts, and you can enter the contest that way. And or you can go to Armstrong Lock and Security in person and enter the contest there as well. Now, you have to get entered by Saturday because that's when the drawing, and somebody is going to be this is a beautiful safe.
Well, that's right.
I wish I could show you folks the picture.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, only one person is going to win this safe, but these people have fantastic deals. They've got some great sales going on right now on safes, too. So this is the time. If you don't win the safe, this is the time to check out the other safes.
And they do have beautiful safes. I like to go in there every now and then, although I haven't done it in years, and just kind of look around at the safes. But I used to get keys made there all the time. But anyway, Armstrong Lock and Security, North Mills Avenue in Orlando, 745 78 660 are the numbers. And please enter the contest and be there Saturday, because everybody who enters, I guarantee you, is not going to show up Saturday. So you enter the contest and show up, and your odds of winning are going to be very, very good. And it is a gun safe, even if you want to put other things in it. All right. And so
Chris is referring to that because a TV station in town wouldn't call it a gun safe.
You mean Fox 35?
Oh, well, you imagine it.
We weren't going to say who.
We were trying to think of all these names. Call it, like a weapons receptacle or something like that.
That's right. So get in on that. Get in on the Predators Thursday night. It's going to be a lot of fun. They're still off to a great season start, even though they're 3-1. We're going to go ahead, Nick, and go ahead and take the break, because I see we have Abe on the line. And rather than just, introducing him and then taking a break, we'll just take the break and then introduce him. So we'll be right back.
The battle is heating up. You're listening to The American Adversaries, If You Can Take It.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time on AM 660. The Answer, coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. Want to go now to our man in Jerusalem, and we're so fortunate and blessed to have him with us as a regular on our show. He is a columnist and writes great articles. He's written a brand new article, and you can find it at Breitbart, and you can also find it at abekatzman.com, his website. That's Katzman with an S. And it's entitled Palestinianism Doesn't Allow Peace Process to Succeed. So let's go now to our man in Jerusalem, Abe Katzman. Hey, Abe, how you doing tonight?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Excellent. And
fantastic.
Congratulations once again on an excellent article. And I just want to lead into it by asking this question. Are the peace talks dead?
They're on life support. I think there's maybe brain death, but they've still got a respirator or something going.
Right.
It's all but dead.
If they were Catholic, they'd be calling in the priest to do last rites.
Absolutely.
But the reason I ask that question first is because your article points out Palestinianism doesn't allow peace process to succeed. Is that the talks never even had a chance?
That's a pretty fair conclusion. The the talks might have had a chance under different circumstances. The talks might have had a different had a chance under different Palestinian leadership. But they did not have a chance with this leadership, and they did not have a chance at this time the way that the Palestinian people have been conditioned to see themselves. And that's really what I was getting into with the idea of Palestinianism, that the entire identity of being Palestinian at this point, there's no affirmative identity. The entire identity is a negative identity, an identity wrapped up in struggle with Israel. And it's very difficult to ask people. I mean, there'd be a real existential crisis if you ask people whose entire life is devoted to struggle with Israel to suddenly compromise with Israel, to recognize Israel's legitimacy and Israel's permanence. And you're not going to get there. That's going to be a problem that you're going to have with the population. And it's also a problem that you have with the leadership. The leadership has its own separate reasons why the leadership is also not going to be interested in making peace, some very selfish reasons that have to do with how good they have it being the leaders in this situation, with loads of foreign aid coming in that they seem to be very good at skimming off of.
And Nate, you point out that the struggle the Palestinians perceive is rooted in their perception of victimhood, that they're living out this victimhood. And I thought that was very profound, and because, you know, that is the liberal mantra, you know, is that people are being victimized and you want to get back, so to speak, at those who are victimizing you.
That's true. This is actually the most extreme example I can think of where victimhood can lead in terms of debilitating and ruining a population. Somebody has described, maybe it was Mark Stein, who refers to the Palestinians as the most wrecked people on earth. And what he means by that is that they have been, they have been victimized primarily by their Arab brothers. And they've been used as pawns. They haven't been absorbed by the other Arab countries. And instead, they've been set up to be these perpetual victims, and they don't end up accomplishing anything as a result. They just kind of are sitting there waiting for their victimhood to pay some dividends. Victimhood doesn't pay dividends.
No. Now, Abe, with John Kerry coming over, it seems like again and again, this administration wants these meetings. They want this discussion to go on, but I don't see anything different. I don't see them bringing anything different to the table. We know what the parties want. We know what the parties are dislike about each other. And I can't imagine we keep going back to the table, the administration, oh, we got to work this out. But we already know this one wall is not going to be overcome, and this other group isn't going to go do this. It's just not going to happen.
No, some time ago, the process became much more about the process and not about peace. There seems to be this great value placed on just having the parties talk. That I can understand the value in that if it's preventing war, but what's happening here is that, you know, the situation before John Kerry got involved was, I guess I would describe it as tense but stable. And what he did by coming in here is kind of unleashed a lot of bad blood between the two sides. I think the likelihood of violence is actually higher now as a result of Kerry's efforts than it would have been had Kerry never set foot in the region.
Yeah, I agree with you, because he raised people's expectations and hoped only to have them dashed in the end. And I think the Washington Post characterized his notion that he could actually succeed over there as delusional. But you talk about this in the article about how, you know, the Palestinian Abbas in particular and Arafat before him, you know, the process is what makes them who they are, not coming to peace with anybody. So they are not motivated to come to peace, nor have they laid a foundation, as you mentioned earlier, amongst the people for peace.
No, they've done quite the opposite. They have created a culture of incitement against Israel. Terrorists are the biggest heroes in Palestinian society. The textbooks are full of incitement. Summer camps are about terror training and defeating the Israelis. It's very hard to even think of some cultural hero or role model among Palestinians who is not somehow connected to violent struggle against Israel. And if that's what the leadership has been promoting, they're certainly not going to be laying the groundwork for any kind of peaceful resolution with Israel.
It's an excellent article. Palestinianism doesn't allow peace process to succeed. And folks, you can find it at Breitbart.com or at Abe Katzman, that's KATSMAN.com as well. And if you'd like to ask Abe a question, the number is 407-774-8255. Abe, I'd like to ask you this. What do you think prompted the prime minister to stop the prisoner releases?
I think the biggest issue was it became evident that the Palestinians were not negotiating for any kind of resolution. They were just staying in the negotiations for the purpose of having the prisoners released. And one of the conditions of the prisoner release, the reason that these prisoner releases were staggered over a nine-month period, was that they were each conditioned on some progress being made in the talks. So at this point, just I guess it was, a week or two ago when Mahmoud Abbas came up with his three no's, when he said to President Obama, yeah, there would be no recognition of Israel as a Jewish state, no compromise on the right of return, no end to the conflict. I think the feeling in Israel was, what's left to talk about? You've just made it impossible to come to any kind of final agreement. So why release more terrorists?
Yeah, in fact, that whole process underlines what you talk about in your article, that to them the process of getting these little concessions along the way was more important than actually sitting down and coming to a peace deal of any sort. Now, when they first started this a little over 8 months ago, they put a nine-month time limit on it, which would bring it to the end of this month, I believe. Is there any hint or any rumors? Are there any rumors that this this deadline would be extended?
There are efforts afoot to try to keep the talks going. I don't know where they're going to go. There have also been some bad stuff said, especially from the Palestinian side against Israel. One of the heads of Fatah blamed America's Jewish advisors for ruining the talks by always taking Israel's position. At the same time, the lead negotiator for the Palestinians is now cozying up to Hamas again and made some statements along the lines that Hamas is a pure Palestinian organization and it was never a terror group. This is the same man who's supposed to be negotiating with the Israelis over some kind of peaceful resolution to the conflict. It's one thing to talk out of both sides of your mouth, but this is inflammatory stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, and I don't mean to be funny, but it's kind of ironic, and that is that one offshoot of all of this is that there are some people here in the United States that would probably be pleased to find out that as Abbas goes to the UN to get recognition from the various agencies. Now, of course, this is all predicated on the fact that Barack Obama will follow the law, which he doesn't seem to be predisposed to do. But Congress has passed a law that as these agencies recognize the Palestinian state, that they will lose their funding from the United States of America. Is that your understanding, Abe?
That's the law. That was passed by Congress, and I think that you're very correct in wondering whether the Obama administration will follow through with that. But that is, as far as I understand it, that is the law.
Okay. Now, I'd like to ask you this. Is what's going on in Syria beginning to spill over into the Palestinian situation?
I'm not sure that it's spilling over into the Palestinian situation so much. Syria carries with it its own set of issues. One of them, by the way, Israeli intelligence today said that turns out that Assad is using chemical weapons again. I don't know if that made news in America or not.
Well, I'm surprised to say. We're surprised to hear. Well, I shouldn't say surprised, but no, that has not been reported to my knowledge here in the United States. I'm sure that it'll eventually be reported here, but probably with some caveats to try to discredit it. But should anybody be surprised? I mean, he hasn't gone to any, real lengths to get rid of the things.
Israeli intelligence believes that he's gotten rid of about half of his supply, but that still leaves 1,300 metric tons, which means about 2.5 million pounds of chemical weapons. And it doesn't take a lot of some of these weapons to do some real damage. I mean, they're very potent. Things like sarin gas, doesn't take a lot to kill a lot of people.
Yeah. All right, Abe, will you stay with us through the break? We got a couple more questions for you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with our man in Jerusalem, which is where he's at tonight, Abe Katzman. Got a great new article out. Really does kind of give you the lay of the land in terms of the peace talks over there. Palestinianism doesn't allow peace process to succeed. You can find it at Breitbart. You can also find it at abekatzman.com.
Folks, American adversaries are almost always here every night, but Saturday night, Sunday through Friday, of course. They're Adams Christopher Hart. We are the best in political professional wrestling. Oh, by the way, tomorrow night will be our night at Pasquale's. That's right, Cafe Positano. So if you're thinking about heading over this week, join us over there tomorrow night, which I believe is prime rib night, isn't it, Chris?
Prime rib night.
Call ahead, make sure you get it. The best prime rib in, actually, all of Florida.
It's crazy.
And that's from an Italian restaurant.
You can cut it with a fork.
You better believe it. We'll be right back.
Here is tonight's American Adversary SoundbiteRx.com News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Tonight's SoundbiteRx.com News Minute is being brought to you by Lake Mary Jewelers. For that special gift, for that special someone, go to Lake Mary Jewelers at the intersection of Lake Mary Boulevard and Lake Emma Road. Call them today, 407-878-6230. Now, here's Christopher Hart with Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com.
Okay, hi, folks. This is Chris Hart. Ted will be back with us on Wednesday. As I've said, SoundbiteRx.com puts up a lot of articles every day, but I want to focus on this one for today. It's an article entitled, Syria Crisis, Failure to Intervene Will Have Terrible Consequences, Says Blair. This is according to UK former Prime Minister Tony Blair. He says, and I quote, "The world will face terrible consequences over many years to come for failing to intervene in Syria." What is he doing now, you might ask? He serves as the envoy for the Middle East quartet of the UN, the United States, the EU, and Russia. And he said the failure to confront Bashar al-Assad will have ramifications far beyond the region. Speaking on the BBC, he said, "We have not intervened in Syria. The consequences are, in my view, terrible and will be a huge problem, not just for the Middle East region, but for us in the years to come." He advocated military action even now, and says that we can't wait. We have to do something because the problems will come to us if we don't go to the problems. He has taken criticism in the past for going along with President George W. Bush as he went into Iraq. He defended that Iraq policy, saying, "Just imagine if Saddam Hussein were around today, what trouble he would be making." This is something that I think liberals kind of lose sight of. They're always looking only at the world as it is today, never imagining how it could be a whole lot worse if we step off the stage. And that's what we're doing. That's why we have these problems. That's why we need to take Syria far more seriously. Folks, you can find this stuff, and you'll also find Abe Katzman's article featured on Wednesday on SoundbiteRx.com. Please go there. It's good medicine. We'll be right back.
AM 660, The Answer. Time saver traffic.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you're listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time on AM 660. The Answer, coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. Please Remember to call my friend, Dr. James E. Hardy, for the best in mercury-free dentistry at 407-678-3399. We have our man in Jerusalem, Abe Katzman, on the line with us right now. If you'd like to join the conversation, 407-774-8255 is the number. And you can find Abe Katzman's work at his website, Abe Katzman, that's KATSMAN.com. And you also find his stuff put up on Breitbart and a lot of the Israeli publications and other publications as well. And you'll find it highlighted on SoundbiteRx.com as of Wednesday. Abe, I don't know if you were listening during the break there, but during our Soundbite News Minute, I was referring to an article where Tony Blair was pretty outspoken in what's going on, what he sees is not going on in Syria, and he's calling for intervention. Does that kind of talk just kind of make everybody a little bit more frightened, the situation being as touchy as it is?
People are nervous about Syria. Syria is, nobody knows how things are going to turn out. Hezbollah maintains that they have secured victory for the Assad government, but nobody knows if that's actually the case. There are increased attacks against Israel. There's no end, apparently, to the flow of refugees and to the murder of citizens. Nobody knows how this is going to turn out, and it's a powder keg that is where they can export the powder. This can cause a lot of spillover trouble in Israel and Lebanon and Turkey.
And if those chemical weapons were to find themselves on the international market, they could wind up anywhere. I think that's what Tony Blair was talking about.
Yep.
Is it basically then inevitable that the only way to really see this situation through is at some point the West is going to have to think seriously about intervening much more profoundly than it has been doing?
That there are difficulties in that going that route also. We've spoken before about the problem of who to back if the West gets involved.
Well, that's why I'm saying let me put the question more directly this way. Does it look like if this situation is going to be resolved that it's going to take boots on the ground, American allied boots on the ground?
It's a tough question to answer. I think there's a lot of there's so much resistance to putting boots on the ground here. I'd say almost no matter what the stakes are. But if you're talking about chemical weapons getting loose and getting into the hands of people, of groups that can do America and Europe a lot of harm, then, yeah, I think that we'll get to that point.
I can. I may not be able to envision right now, tanks rolling in and things like that, but I can certainly envision special operations forces going in there and doing some demolition projects.
Yeah, I would think that the U.S. would be capable of doing it. One of the problems, again, is we don't necessarily know where everything is.
There's
so much of this stuff spread around in so many places that it would take an incredible amount of coordination and perfect intelligence in order to do that kind of raid and to actually destroy everything.
Yeah. Lair's got a couple questions on a different topic, but I want to kind of swing back to the Palestinian thing here just for a minute. Charles Krauthammer wrote an article that came out in the local newspaper yesterday talking about Kerry's diplomacy being a disaster, and sort of as a last straw or a last-ditch effort, he pulled out this Jonathan Pollard thing. How did that play in Israel?
Well, Pollard is a very complicated issue in Israel. From the Israeli perspective, Pollard was a spy doing Israel's work, and they look at him as being somebody kind of left out in the field. So there are people here who very much want to bring him to Israel. There are also a lot of people who understand that you don't do that kind of thing to to the United States, and that he was caught. And if you're going to take the kind of risks, don't do the crime. Mm-hmm. You can't do the time.
Yeah, that's that's the old jailhouse saying. But I don't mean to, you know, laugh and make light of it. But I, beyond the issue of Pollard, and as you say, it's a very delicate issue, doesn't it signify, though, the desperation, if you will, on the part of the Obama administration here?
Yes, and that was recognized in Israel also. I think people were, on the one hand, pleased at the possibility that Pollard might be released, but at the same time, we're kind of looking at each other wondering, what does this have to do with anything? If Pollard should be released, Pollard should be released. And if he shouldn't be released, don't release him. But what does one thing have to do with another? What does he have to do with negotiations between the Palestinians and the Israelis? Let the Palestinians and the Israelis make concessions to each other. Why is America going to free somebody that apparently they otherwise wouldn't free in order that the Israelis and the Palestinians should keep talking? It just doesn't make sense. Well, I think it was a very bad idea.
Yeah, well, as is most of the Obama administration foreign policy.
That's what I was going to say. There's so many bad news items that comes out of this administration. Now, what about this latest thing with the Iranians and their nuclear talks? What they're, you know, they're kind of ballyhooing different things. And basically, it seems like it's a waste of time.
Isn't that another process where it's all about the process and really not about a deal, Abe?
It seems to be all about the process. The Iranians have given no indication that they are going to make any significant compromise. They're talking about having some kind of final deal. But again, the final deal they envision and the final deal that the Obama administration envisions are two very different things.
Yeah.
Now, Abe, I don't know if you happen to see Maria Huff. She's a State Department spokesperson last week. She went on the air, and reporters were asking her about this new ambassador that Iran was going to send out. And he's to the UN, and he's a former hostage taker from, you know, what was that, Chris?
79.
Yes, yeah. Back in 79. And, I mean, she was just so insipid and childish. And, no, I don't have to answer your question. I don't have an answer. And you don't, you know, I'm not going to tell you.
And wasn't that a thumb in the eye to begin with to appoint this guy? I mean, they know who he is.
They know very well who he is, and that's why they appointed him. I think they're actually kind of enjoying kicking around the Obama administration, just humiliating them at every turn. And what's really depressing is that they seem to be able to do it, and the Obama administration doesn't stand up.
No. They're making no effort whatsoever.
To bring in the wrestling analogy, I remember when we were kids and we would be wrestling, my brother and other friends, we'd be wrestling on the floor. And, of course, what you try to do is get the other guy down, you know, with his hands down, and then you would tweak him on the nose and you would pull his ears and do stuff. That's exactly what they're the Russians, the Syrians, the Iranians, they're all doing that to Obama.
Yeah. And, you know, how hard would it be for the Obama administration to just say, no, we're not letting this guy into the country? Even we have our red lines, our real red lines.
Right.
Apparently there are none.
Evidently not. Now, they say they have not yet made a final decision, but to me, it's a no-brainer. The final decision should have been, allowed this guy to even think that this could happen?
And it also goes to leadership, because a good leader would have nipped it in the bud right away, and that's what this administration continues to do. They continue to just plod along at everything. It's agonizing.
Abe, the final word.
No, that's a very good description of how they act. They seem to ruminate over everything, even when they should have very quick reactions, and it makes a difference.
It sure does. And, Abe, you make a difference around here, and we really appreciate your work. It's a great article. Once again, folks, it's called Palestinianism Doesn't Allow Peace Process to Succeed. Abe, thank you so much. You take care.
One thing real quick, too, Abe, I want you to know we have had several of our listeners call in and tell us how much they enjoy listening to you and what you bring to the show.
More than several. All the time we hear about that. So, Abe, we really appreciate you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Good night. And that is Abe Katzman, and retiring now in Jerusalem. And it is an excellent article, as are all of Abe's articles. And once again, you can find his work at Abe Katzman, that's KATSMAN.com.
And he tells us stuff here before anybody else knows about it.
That's right.
Speaking of which, I've got a special lady out there. Her name is Luann, and she works with Roxy Pacifics. She's so wonderful. She sends me these great testimonials. Peggy, at age 60, gets dry eyes. The doctor gave her some drops. They didn't work. The Roxy does it. Another fellow, Max, 17 years old, uses a doctor's product for acne. It didn't work. It burned his skin. He now uses Roxy Pacific every morning before he goes to school. He's got clear skin. Never worries about acne. Write down this phone number, 619-654-4829, RoxyPacifics.net. And if you make your order by April 15th, again, free shipping. Don't miss out on this opportunity.
The American adversaries, these guys, stimulate my brain.
Oh, you better believe it. Speaking of sexy hunks, she mentioned one of them that's on the air with us right now, and that would be our good buddy and executive producer and chief cook and bottle washer, Nostradennis. Okay, I lied. He's not with us. Nostradennis, are you there?
Hi there.
There we go.
I was a little unsettled last night when Patricia described herself to us on a regular Sunday night segment as the female Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan's mustache is a lot thicker and fuller that I don't even see Patricia Summerland's mustache.
Maybe she was wishful thinking.
I think you might have missed the gist of her point there, but yeah, we did talk about WrestleMania and Hulk Hogan with Patricia Summerland.
Well, she's a tall woman.
She's tall, and her thing was, you know, Sonny the California Girl,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he is like the beach guy, and they both had in their contracts that they had to spend a certain amount of time every day in a tan.
Yep.
Salon to make sure that they're, you know, look the right part, right for the part.
Written in the contract.
Right. And occasionally they would run into each other at the tanning salons and got to know one another. But yeah, WrestleMania last night, it was a huge success.
A huge upset, too.
Yeah, Undertaker, yeah.
Well, no, I didn't see it, guys. I don't know if you saw it, but was Lesnar at the end, was he all Mr. Bad Guy, you know, I kicked his butt or whatever, or was he?
I don't know.
Did you see it, Dennis?
No, didn't see it, just read the recap, and it's unusual. I mean, The Undertaker is at the point in his career, he only wrestles once a year.
Yeah.
And that once a year, he makes it count. Last night, he just didn't have it in him to make it count.
Well, I'm going to be watching Raw tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up on Raw and just for the heck of it, wailed on old Brock Lesnar a little bit. But anyway, it is as it
is. He used to carry around a burial urn, didn't he, or something? That used to be
Paul,
a shtick?
Paul Bearer.
Yeah, but
Paul
somebody
Bearer,
would get hit with that urn sometime during
manager,
a match.
Paul Bearer, who I found out was actually an Undertaker.
Seriously?
Real. Yeah.
He's passed on, right?
Yes. Yeah, he passed away last year, old Paul Bearer. And speaking of contests, Nostradennis, before I get to you, I know you got a couple of stories, but we got this today from the congressional campaign of candidate David Smith, our friend Colonel David Smith. He has just received a very important endorsement. He has been endorsed by the Combat Veterans for Congress PAC. And this is a big amongst combat veterans. It includes, of course, veterans of all of the branches of service. And he received a ringing endorsement from retired Captain Joe John of the Combat Veterans for Congress. And let me just read you what retired Captain John said about David Smith. He said, "The military is one of the few remaining institutions producing the caliber of men and women needed to restore this nation to the greatness our founding fathers envisioned," he said of David Smith. "He is a veteran who, at one point in his life, wrote a blank check made payable to the United States of America for an amount up to and including his life." And, you know, Colonel Danny McKnight has often said, you know, people who, you know, have these high offices would probably be well served having served in the military. And, of course, 20 years in the United States Marine Corps, retires as a colonel. That's a great endorsement.
That's where you develop leadership.
For David Smith. And we do need David Smith in Congress. And I want to thank Sherry for calling Reverend John Butler's books show last night and giving Congressman, here I'm getting ahead of myself
yeah.
again, congressional candidate Colonel David Smith a ringing endorsement. And so congratulations for that endorsement. Nostradennis.
Yeah, you know, it comes down to this in the issue of David Smith. If you like what's going on in politics today, keep voting for the guys who've been there for 10 and 12 and 15 and 20 years.
Send Micah back again. Yeah.
Elect someone new.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. All right, Nostradamus, you got a couple of interesting stories to take us out of here tonight on.
Okay, how about this one? The Boy Scouts have a favorable rating, according to Rasmussen polling, but not so much anymore. The latest Rasmussen Report survey finds that only 59% of Americans share at least somewhat favorable opinion of the Boy Scouts. This is down 6 points from last May and 14 points from 2 years ago. If we extrapolate this, this means they're going to be in negative territory within about 2 years.
Well, now, you would think, given what they did to that guy out there with, Mozilla, and all this stuff, that once the Boy Scouts announced that they would accept gay scouts, that their approval rating would go up.
Well, apparently it hasn't among the people they've surveyed. And, in fact, since Mozilla did what it did, I know personally a lot of people who are deliberately uninstalling the Mozilla search engine and web browser from their computer system.
And you're not going to go on Cupid and look for dates, are you, Dennis?
Not anymore.
Okay.
No, not anymore.
Larry.
By the way, the Wall Street Journal did an article today talking about the Ike uproar may hurt Mozilla's web goals. In other words, they have put themselves in an unwinnable position here. And I believe it started by taking what I call the Paula Deen approach. And that is, oh, please forgive me. Yes, I did wrong. You know, it was before, but I don't feel that way anymore. You know, I believe that they should have taken the Phil Robertson approach, and that is the guy should have stood up and said, yeah, I gave $1,000 to the Proposition 8 movement, but guess what? Back in 2008, a fellow by the name of Barack Obama felt the same way as I did. And so, you know, get over it.
Have you heard Bill Maher's all over this, too? I mean, he's like, that's ridiculous. He's on our side on this one.
Well, and oddly enough, there are a number of gay writers coming out saying, hey,
yes,
wait a minute. I mean, isn't this taking it a little bit far? Because evidently the guy, I mean, if he works in Silicon Valley, you know, I hate to say it, but you know he's got some gay friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So he was railroaded by fascist tactics, no question about it. Nostradamus. And as I said Friday, it's a heck of a way to get people to be tolerant by showing them how to be intolerant.
Yeah, and I think what turns off a lot of people on both sides of this issue is the waffling. When you come out forcefully on one side and then immediately flip around and come out forcefully on the other side, you end up annoying people on both sides.
Yeah, well, as I said, Brandon Ike himself, you know, when this first blew up, should have just said, hey, look, get over it. That was then. This is now. Things have changed. Let's move on.
Perfect example, guys. Chick-fil-A.
Yep.
They just ignored it. They just ignored it. And
it came
the
out
best
stronger.
Numbers they've ever had.
Came out stronger. I guarantee you that if I could have stood up to this, Mozilla would be finding a whole lot of new supporters they never knew they had. And I would imagine, Nostradamus, you'd be one of them.
Oh, yes, I sure would, yeah.
All right. You had another story for us.
Yes, I do. This is movie news, and it's movie news on a few different fronts. The number one box office winner of the weekend, a real big knockout, $96.2 million over the weekend, was Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which a lot of people are calling an incredibly conservative movie.
And they're also saying it was the biggest first weekend take in April in box office history.
Yeah. Right. Usually action movies like this go from about Memorial Day to Labor Day, and Disney's decided they're going to do this with an April release. They have a lot of different characters with a lot of different movies before they bring all the Avengers back next spring with a new movie.
Yeah, I was able to see the screening last Tuesday with Joe Ferrero, the promotions director.
You saw
here.
It?
Yeah.
You bum!
What do you think, Chris? Did it? Speak loudly as a conservative movie to you?
Let's just say if they told me that Rand Paul was used as a consultant on this movie, I would have believed it.
Okay.
All right. Because I don't want to give away a whole lot about the movie, let people go see it fresh. But one thing I was delighted about, and that was Robert Redford was a bad guy. A liberal
Robert
bad guy at that. But and he gets killed at the end, deservedly so.
Oh, you ruined it for me.
Oh, did I say that? Oh, my God. But, Rand Paul, let's just say, would probably be very pleased with this movie.
And here's another one, the number four movie of the weekend, and its third week. It brought in over $32 million, And a lot of Hollywood people are shaking their heads wondering, what the heck is this all about? The movie God's Not Dead.
Now, to me, that's the bigger news. Now, you saw that movie, Dennis.
I did, and I was very impressed by it. You know, what movie can you find that has Superman, Hercules, and God all in the same movie? Yeah, Dean Cain, who played Clark and Lois and Clark,
yep.
plays a real non-Christian guy. And Kevin Sorbo plays
Hercules,
a jaded liberal professor who makes his students write out, God is dead. One student decides he can't do that because of his faith, and the movie is takes off from that point.
And this is based on a true story that you actually reported on our show, I think about a year or so ago, wasn't it, Dennis?
Yeah, I sure did.
And the biggest flop that's out there right now is the movie that took God out of the movie, Noah. Over the weekend, $17 million. This thing is going to go so far in the hole, it's not funny.
Yeah, it was a big budget movie, and the God's Not Dead budget had to be, maybe one-tenth of the size of Noah's. There's no...
Probably less than that.
...in this movie. There's just pure acting.
Noah spent $125 million just to advertise it.
Yeah, then they're going to definitely be a money-losing film.
And who said God is dead? Not us.
Not me.
All right, thanks so much, Nostradamus. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Okay, folks, don't forget, we will be back tomorrow night.
You better believe it. Tuesday night, and again, after the show, we'll be at Cafe Positano's. Dennis, Johnny Gunn, everybody else should be there, too. We'd like to have you join us. It is a prime rib night. In the meantime, everybody, drive home if you haven't made it yet. Have a great evening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Night, everybody.